Blog Talk Radio.
Now, of course, I want peace on the streets, but realistically, painting perfect pictures ain't never worked. My misery was so deep, couldn't sleep through all my pressures in my quest for cash. I learned fast, using violent measures, memories of adolescent years. There was unity, but after puberty, we brought war to our community. So many bodies dropping, it's gotta stop. I wanna help, but still I'm stepping. Keep my weapon, must protect myself. The promise of a better tomorrow ain't never reaching. Plus, my teachers was too petrified in class to teach me. Sipping Thunderbird and Great Kool-Aid, calling Earl since my stomach was empty. Introduced me to fuck the world. Watch my little homies lose their childhood to guns. Nobody cries no more, cause we all die for fun. So why you ask me if I want peace? If you can't grant it, niggas fighting across the whole planet. So it can never be peace. Will there ever be peace? Or are we all just headed for doom? Still consumed by the beast. And I know there'll never be peace. That's why I keep my pistol when I walk the street, cause there can never
be peace.
No
time to rest, stay stressed out. I can't remember the days my homies were scared. Nowadays we live in fear, the struggle's still here. So now, who's just grabbing their trap and getting buck wild? Representing a generation of killers. When I was a child, had many dreams, but reality kept me and my homies stressed. And trying to raise my baby girl to be the strongest, knowing I'm doing wrong. And I never had a right day, just darkness, smoking blunts and getting faded, wishing my partner made it. If it was peace, all this was peace, but I know it'll never be. All my tears were shed when all I told me number three. It's getting harder to see impossibilities. Should we just face it? Can't get through the pain, but still I can't erase it. So no many trials and tribulations. The scenes we facing, wicked ways. Can't see no brighter days. It's time to quit chasing false dreams, cause the scheme is planned. You'll never get by. That's why I gotta stay high. You never know when you'll die. My heart'll never leave the ghetto. I know the riot's only in peace. That's why I say it ain't gonna never be no peace.
There'll never be peace. That's why I keep my pistol when I walk the street. Fool, there'll never
living
be peace.
Living life lonely, but I can't even cry. Cause visions of deceptions all around me got my eyes full of despise. Who can I trust? Why even try? They say the world is mine, but I know that's a lie. Living to die, set up from birth. Steady dreaming, wishing for better days, but all I see is demons. Close my eyes and reminisce of my childhood, but all I felt was pain from my arrival. No memories of nothing nice, nothing but blinding reminders of my future life. I'm freaking out, I'm getting closer to that other level. Will I be strong with game or just a heartless devil? I hope I'm able to find peace in me, cause there's a storm 64 inches deep in me. And I try to do the right, but it's the wrong thing that seem to bring me right back to the dirty game. There'll never be
fuck
peace.
Will there ever be peace? Or are we all just headed for doom? Still consumed by the beast. And I know there'll never be peace. That's why I keep my pistol when I walk the streets. Fool, there'll never be peace. Will there ever be peace? Or are we all just headed for doom? Still consumed by the beast. And I know there'll never be peace. That's why I keep my pistol when I walk the streets. Nigga, there'll never be peace. Will there ever be peace? Or are we all just headed for doom? Still consumed by the beast. And I know there'll never be peace. That's why I keep my pistol when I walk the streets. Nigga, there'll never be peace. Will there ever be peace?
Shit.
Fuck peace. On the strength till my niggas get a peace, we can't have peace. How the fuck we gonna live happy and we ain't got nothing? Motherfuckers are smiling, but I'm mean. Why? Cause I gotta get done.
The automatic.
It seemed drugs and church this whole motherfucking hood out. All us niggas acting up. Wild ass motherfucking adolescent. These niggas ain't even got no childhood no more. How the fuck can you have a childhood? You at the funeral every motherfucking weekend. And you motherfuckers talking about peace. Nigga, it ain't no motherfucking. You ain't seen the news, motherfucker. You ain't heard. Little babies getting smoked, motherfuckers killing their whole family. Little kids getting thrown off buildings, motherfuckers getting abused. No peace. Niggas, you out your fucking mind? Fuck peace. We can't never have peace till you motherfuckers clean up this mess you made. Till you fucking clean up the dirt you dropped. Till we get a peace. Fuck peace. West Side, Death Row, Outlaw Immortals. Thug Life, baby. You know how we do this shit. That was Storm, Marvelous, and Pop. Headed for doom, still consumed by the beast, and I know there'll never be peace.
That's why I keep my pistol when I walk the street, cause they'll never be beat.
Peace, 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 Black Power family. Welcome to another episode of Through Knowledge Radio, the place where knowledge is born. This is your host, Knowledge Born a Lot. We're here on our Thinking Out Loud Thursday with the National Chairwoman of New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, our modern day Queen Nzinga. Crystal Muhammad is in the building, and we only got our sister for a limited time, so make it count. Phone number to call in, family, 929-477-1755. Again, 929-477-1755. Press 1 with your questions or your comments or your shout out. So it's my honor and privilege at this time to introduce something to tonight's guest on Thinking Out Loud Thursday, the National Chairwoman of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. General Crystal Muhammad is in the building.
Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power.
Am I coming in clearly?
Coming in clear, loud and clear.
Right on, right on. Yes, Brother Knowledge, Thinking Out Loud Thursdays, there's a lot that's going on, there's a lot to talk about. So whatever it is that you want me to build on, just shoot. I'm ready.
Okay. I did have one question as we started out. For you, what was it, what was the catalyst for you? I know you've been in the trenches on the front line for the hearts and minds of our people, injustice for our people, and, you know, destruction to our enemies, foreign and domestic. So what was it about you? What was the catalyst that got you started as a liberator in this liberation struggle?
Okay, well, I've always been pro-black. I was born in the 70s, so I was always reared around black culture. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. I'm hearing a lot of noise. I'm coming from a family of entrepreneurs who come from both the rural parts of Louisiana as well as New Orleans. I've always been taught by my family about not only black pride, but about their fight in dealing with racism and injustice. My first thought that I wanted to be a freedom fighter, I remember as a child, my grandfather was a businessman. He had a few businesses in Houston, as well as a few businesses in northern Louisiana where he was from. And they grew up in aggressive segregation where there was a lot of racial tension. In fact, I remember it to the point that one day my grandfather was telling me that he just happened to explain to me that my grandmother's mother had been killed by some white boys, and it was racial related. And it stuck in me. I think I was like about 6. And then later on that following school year, we went to school. Now, this was on my mind from the summer. And we went to school, and they were talking about Dr. King and things of that nature. And I remember saying to myself, well, if racism was still around, I would have helped Dr. King, not knowing that a child, pretty much being most of my life being only around black people, black schools, black church, black family, you know, we was not subjugated to racism. At least I didn't know it. I grew up when there was a time when we would go to the black theaters, and we would see black movies where we had black people that was the superhero or the protagonist in the movie, or it would be a karate movie. So even the culture I was around was all about pro-blackness coming up as a child in the 70s. We might watch like cartoons, but, you know, the next thing, the cartoon we would be watching would be like Soul Train. So when the, you know, coming up in the South, it, you know, we pretty much live in the segregated type of way, not knowing it was segregated, but it was always a positive and beautiful experience. You know, we would go to skating rinks and have talent competitions, you know, about the most beef we would have would be competing talent-wise, you know, dance off or sing off, or, you know, rapping came out, rap off. So that was the culture that I grew up in. And I had a goal that I wanted to be an attorney, you know, because I still had this desire to fight for justice. And, you know, I would hear my family talk about the things they went through during segregation, you know, and how they were, you know, so resilient, and how they always stressed to me and my family, and even up until this day, about Black excellence. You know, we were never told or showed anything less. In fact, my family had the privilege of having farmland and things of that nature, a land in Louisiana. But as I started growing up and, you know, getting into the so-called real world, I remember going to college at Texas Southern University, and that was the first time I ever even heard of Malcolm X or the Black Panthers or, you know, any people that were actually revolutionaries. You know, like I said, the most influential, or the only probably that I can recall Black freedom fighter I would have heard of would have been Martin Luther King, and I think maybe Sojourner Truth or something like that. So, again, you know, just my overall upbringing was always about pride and culture and Black excellence. And so, but there was always this understanding and undertone about it was understood that it was Black against white. So, but I had actually never experienced it until around the ninth grade. My mother sent me to a private school, and it was the first time that I had been in a non all Black environment. And it was the majority this time, a white environment. And not only was it a majority white environment, it was a bunch of wealthy whites. And that's my first time actually experiencing racism. We were the Black students, you know, we were always academically, you know, on top, you know, because that wasn't nothing accepted less than that in our family. You know, you got anything less than a B, you was in trouble. And so we automatically, the Black students, myself and the little clique that we had, we excelled not only academically but in all sports. You know, we played volleyball and basketball and pretty much dominated that as well. But we experienced actual racism from the students. You know, there would be little comments they would be trying to make about our hair, and, you know, and little comments about, you know, the little Black joke, white jokes, and we would kick them back to them. You know, we didn't take it, you know, like let them talk about us. You know, we would, you know, back in the day we would call it ranking, but we would rank back on them. And it went from how being in an all-Black school, when we were ranked, it might be your mama this, your mama that. But when we got into this racial charged environment, it was Black against white, you know. And so I remember in the ninth grade, when this was the time when the Houston Astros, I was staying in Houston, the Houston Astros won the World Series. And the principal, now this is a Catholic school, a white principal, got on the intercom system, and he said, well, you know, we were going to let you guys off for the World Series, but the state is making us celebrate Dr. King Day, so we're not going to let you guys off. And a little mini race riot jumped off. You know, the white kids was like, fuck Dr. King. And we was like, you know, we just, you know, literally got into arguments, and it was about to erupt into physical altercation. And I remember the principal coming in and pretty much scolding us, you know, the black students. It was only a handful of us. And so at that point, you know, I was, you know, I told my mother, you know, I got to get out to school, you know, it's racist, you know. And she was with this, you know, push through it. And I was like, I was so adamant. And so not only was it racist, you know, I told her about the racism, and she was like, you got to push through it, and, you know, that kind of type of talk. And then I remember one day in we were in the theology class, and I remember seeing these white boys sniffing cocaine out the Bible. And I was like, what the hell is that? You know what I'm saying? And I remember going back and telling my mother, and then that's the only reason why she let me get out that school. You know, I was going to have to endure the racism. But I learned then, just in that one year, that not only were we smarter than white people, not only were we physically and athletically stronger than them and quicker than them, but we were, we had higher values than they had. And that was my first encounter with so-called white, so-called elite. And it, you know, it stuck in my mind. So fast forward, going to all black HBU, first time hearing about, you know, it would be different little programs people would put in. It was never in the curriculum. So all the way from all these schools I went to, we never learned about black freedom fighters until I got into college and I started, you know, coming into knowledge of self, starting off with a program that the Black United Front had hosted about Malcolm X. And from the Malcolm X film, it led me to seeking about more type of that black knowledge. And I would, you know, I was in around this time, we was heavily into the hip hop thing. I used to rap. We would throw shows. I was a promoter, you know. So we'd be flipping through the different little neighborhoods, and I would always see the brothers with the final calls. And they always, you know, they was good looking, they was clean, they was real nice, you know. So I would always buy final calls from them and just start reading different little things about our people, you know, that I hadn't been exposed to. So time moved on, dealing with the different stuff as a, being a promoter, being in the music business. I started going through an awakening. We had a couple of great people to show up on campus at Texas Southern, like Kwame Ture showed up one time, and what's his name? KRS-One showed up, Mario Van Peebles showed up, and all of these different, you know, powerful black people with, you know, started, you know, coming around, and it sparked even more and more of a quest, you know, of all the different aspects of, you know, this movement that I hadn't been exposed to. And so I started seeking more and more knowledge. I found the Nation of Islam. I started going to the Nation. I found the Shrine of the Black Madonna. In fact, I would go to both of them. I would go to the Nation used to meet at 2 p.m. on Sunday, and the Shrine used to meet at 11 a.m. So I would go from 11 a.m., you know, to the Shrine, and they talked about the Black Messiah. And, you know, it was a lot of speakers used to come through the Shrine, like Tony Broder and all kind of Tony Broder, Oshawa Kwesi, Steve Coakley, all kind of great speakers would come through. And so I would just, you know, I was like a knowledge sponge, you know, and I'd leave and I'd, you know, I'd go to the mosque and I'd hear all of these, you know, these great lectures from Farrakhan. And at the time, Dr. Khaled was the supreme captain, you know. And this is a time also when the rap industry, before they started calling it hip hop, you know, it was like all of these revolutionary artists were out. So it was the culture that I was exposed to, you know, on through the 70s and 80s, and you know, up until the 90s. And then I was in the music industry, like I said, as an artist, and things of that nature, and the promoter. And I remember seeing this paradigm shift in the industry with the music, you know, to where it went from fight the power to, you know, I'm a pimp, I'm a hoe, you know, pimp that hoe type of music. And I was like, you know, it turned me off. And I had an experience where one of my business associates winded up getting jacked and paralyzed, living a not too progressive lifestyle. I had a couple of boyfriends get killed from trying to hustle. So I was like, man, you know, the street life wasn't what it was. And I took a hiatus from the streets, and I just went deep into, you know, the nation and studying and things of that nature. At this time, you know, I wound up making a decision of simply, you know, being in the nation. But let me back up. I had also, the first organization I joined was the National Black United Front. Today, the ones that bought Malcolm X. And that organization, then and now, they were very much into tackling local issues of injustice. And I kind of broke my teeth in being a human rights organizer with the Black United Front. But spiritually, you know, I was being cultivated and molded, like I said, from the shrine and the nation. And eventually I more so leaned to the nation than the shrine. And so being around all of these powerful Black organizations in my 19s, early 20s, there were so many events that would go on. I would be like a young organizer. I would help host events and, you know, bring speakers and things of that nature. And as I said, at the time when I was going to Texas Southern, my initial goal was to be an attorney until I got my paralegal certificate at another school. And after I wound up getting my paralegal certificate while I was at Texas Southern, I wound up working for these Black attorneys. And I learned very quickly that that wasn't something that I thought I could really do, because it seems as if for some reason they were more driven by money. I can remember being in the receptionist area and, you know, them asking me to find out if the people had money. And, you know, the people, of course, sitting there while I'm in the area, they'd be spilling their heart out to me. And, you know, and if I had to find out that they didn't have the money, I would be told to give them an excuse to get them up out of there or to reset the appointment. And I was like, man, I don't got the demeanor for this, because I take to heart the plight of what people are going through. And I wound up getting meeting a young lady that came into town at the Black United Front meeting, and she was talking about this case called the brother named Gary Graham at the time. It was a death penalty case. Her name was Ashanti Shimaranga. She came down from New York, and she told me she had used to be a Panther. And I was just like, wow, you a Panther. And she had been, Matulu's attorney until she got pregnant and Chokwe Lumumba took over. And she wound up being one of my strong mentors. But I took another turn from not wanting to do music so much, not wanting to do law, but into getting into social activism. And my first activism cause was death penalty abolition, because as I started doing my research, because I was a researcher as a legal assistant, and I would find out how the death penalty, you know, that they basically executed poor Black people for the most part, and how it was a carryover from lynching, and, you know, and how the system, the so-called justice system, was all about money, not innocence, and that the so-called justice system was blatantly racist. In fact, I remember the day that I quit the law firm, I was wrestling. I had to go to work. There was a demonstration that was taking place around lunchtime at the courthouse. And I remember going in, I was like trying to figure out how I was going to sneak to this demonstration. And these attorneys, black attorneys, mind you, they were kind of like in a little conference room joking about white law and black law, you know. And I was like, you know, what do y'all mean, you know? And they were just talking about how for the same charge, how a black person would get far more severe crimes and locked up for longer in the time, and white people get a slap on their hand. And I remember, like, going out, like, how could y'all accept this, you know? You're supposed to be attorneys, you know. And I left out for lunch. I went to the demonstration. I never came back. And I made a commitment at that time that I didn't know what it was going to take, but I wanted to be a full-time freedom fighter. And so I started, I found an area that allowed me to be free, to do my social activism and still, you know, try to make a decent living. And at that time, I jumped into real estate. And so, I just started working. We worked on the campaign to stop the execution of Gary Graham for the time period of 1993 up until 2000. And he had faced like 5 executions. And we organized so strong to stop executions up to 5 times. We had all kind of celebrities get involved, from Danny Glover to Mick Jagger, like from, you know, Hollywood and the left type people. We had, you know, reached out to, and I was working alongside the sister, Ashanti Shimaranga, who was showing me this realm of organizing. And also there was the Black United Front, brother Judon Boney, who was the chairman at the time, and brother Kofi Taharka were, you know, pretty much the ones that was giving me the ropes, showing me the ropes on that. And we wound up, I was, like I said, I was a nation at the time. So we all of our organizations worked in solidarity. So, you know, the concept of black solidarity and the power of mobilization and organizing, I saw it bear fruit during the Gary Graham Shaka Sankofa fight. Gary Graham changed his name in the latter years before he was executed to Shaka Sankofa. But I witnessed how we were able to push and get reprieve, but that was up until the time that George Bush became the governor, and he wound up executing Shaka Sankofa and using it. I'm on the radio, little boy, and using it as his platform to become president. And when that happened, you know, despite all of the national attention, I mean, you can name when Shaka Sankofa was executed. You can name every media entity in the world. It was so many celebrities that came out, white and black, Al Sharpton, you just name them, all kind of people came out. But that was the first time that I saw the Black Panthers. I remember seeing some brothers with guns, and with that, folks were like, that's the Black Panthers. This was in 2000. But the first time I heard of the Black Panthers was in 98 when Dr. Khaled, who was our supreme captain in the nation at the time, there was a little turmoil going on between him and the minister, Minister Farrakhan. You know, it caused a lot of a rift within the nation when I was going there, because, you know, there were those of us who loved both the brothers, and, you know, and when that situation was going on, I remember we were instructed, Dr. Khaled came to speak in Houston, and there was a instruction for us not to go see him, but this was after he had been shot. So a few of us, you know, we went anyway, you know, and I heard him, he was speaking at University of Houston along with Dr. Binyakin, who was somebody I studied with. So I made that decision to go see him. He talked about how he some brothers in Dallas had protected him after he gotten shot, and he was working with them on starting the Black Panther Party. And I remember saying, wow, Black Panthers in Texas. He said they were in Dallas, so, you know, I didn't know if I'd ever meet them, but I saw them in 2000 when Shaka Sankofa was murdered. And then still being an organizer on All Things Black, one of my other great teachers was Dr. Mari Obadeli. He was a professor at Purdue University. And I was a student at TSU, and me and some other students would go down to Fairview and build with him about reparations. And so in 2002, Dr. Obadeli, with the folks with NCOBRA, the Black United Front, the Nation of Islam, Shape Community Center, Shrine of the Black Madonna, they all came together and hosted an event. The conference was at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, but the big speech was at Texas Southern. It was called the Indaba. It was called the Big Sit Down About Reparations. And in attending that at the Shrine, that's when I first ran into the comrades with the New Black Panther Party. They was deep, you know.
I remember that. I was like, damn,
there they go right there, the Panthers, you know what I'm saying? And it was funny because by this time I left Texas Southern, I was at the Art Institute taking multimedia because from doing real estate and doing music and even doing the movement stuff, we always had to market, you know, like come up with our own marketing materials. And I would find myself paying these guys to design stuff, but I had to sit with them and tell them, do this, do this, do this, do that. You know, I was like, shit, I can do this. So I wound up going to the Art Institute and learning how to do multimedia. And just so happened when the Indaba came, the big sit down on reparations, when I saw the Panthers, I had my video camera with me. You know, I was out documenting, you know, even back then we was like, we gotta tell our own story, you know. And at the time the chairman was Malik. It was some brothers that was with him from Dallas, and I was like, man, how can I be a Panther, you know? And then they was like, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. And the first thing I was instructed to do was to go down to Dallas and deal with the brothers and sisters in Dallas. I did that, and it was all she wrote, you know. And what I loved about the party was that in the nation it was a little bit more stricter, you know. Things came from the top down. There were different. It was a little bit more stricter as far as what we were doing and able to do and how we were able to move around. But in the party, you know, they pretty much was like, go take over your city. I was like, bet, you know. And so, like I said, I was already an organizer. I was already pro-black, you know, natural born revolutionary. I just didn't know, you know, that I would evolve all the way up until this point. But it's always been in my heart. I've always been a person, even when I was in the nation, that liked to fish people in, you know. We were going on at a black college, HBU.
Yeah.
You know, we went from ranking in high school to debating on campus about everything, you know.
That's right.
We would have these great debates, you know, we would, you know, be going in on the Greeks, like, what y'all doing being Greeks, you Africans? You know what I'm saying?
So
that was the culture, you know. Black people have always been, I've never known us not to be a proud people. You know, we might have developed some foolish ways, you know, after being up under this system of oppression so long. But for the most part, you know, we're a bad people. I mean, like bad in a good way, like powerful.
Right.
And
that's
so,
right.
And that's how, you know, even with me being in the New Black Panther Party, you know, I never was in bad standing with any organization that I was a part of, never left in bad standing. And I've been able to still hold alliances, you know, with other organizations and other comrades. And, you know, I just really solely believe in black liberation. And I've always believed in the power of the people.
and I've always witnessed the power of the people. So, you know, we take a couple of bumps and bruises being freedom fighters. You know, a few times the enemy may jam us up, but the most bumps and bruises we experience is how we deal with each other knowledge. You know, we have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, we got some issues, you know, but for the most part, you know, those issues can be addressed, you know, if people have consistency and follow through, you know. And that's the big issue, the follow through. You know, our people move on emotion. They move on something that's so-called, you know, popular at the moment. But that consistency and follow-through is something that we are always struggling with. So I hope I haven't been just going on and on, but I wanted to kind of just, you know, do what you said, give you a little background on myself and how I got involved with the party.
Wow, Black Power, I mean, this is a story, this is an iconic story because it sets the timeline into motion for a lot of things that happened, you know, that we both were around, especially during, you know, particular times. You know, I look at the party, you know, with Dr. Khaled and then post a lot of things that we saw, we heard, we was around for, you know, that the public may never know. So it's always good to be able to take a moment to look at, you know, that particular timeline, things that was going on. I came into the party at 18, right after the first Million Youth March. And, you know, I got my stripes, you know, battling with the NYPD that day. You understand what I'm saying? So it was a lot easier because I had brought, you know, half of my project with me up there. I'm from New Jersey. You see what I'm saying? So I brought half of my project with me up there. And, you know, when that went down, right after that, you know, everybody came into the party. It wasn't nothing. You know, I was just a little young foot soldier, and I brought so many folks in, you know, just out there working, you know, politicizing and having to be able to speak multiple languages to multiple people, talk to the Christians like the Christians, talk to the Muslims like the Muslims, talk to the Rastas like the Rastas, talk to the weed head like the weed head. And at, you know, at the end of it all, you know, to be able to bring folks in, you know, to the party and, you know, see as a young man what that Vanguard party would turn into, you know, later on. So,
I didn't know you was in the party. This is my first time knowing that, brother.
Yeah.
Black Power.
Yeah, December 98 to about maybe 2002 officially, but like unofficially, maybe like 04. You know, after the transition to Dr. Khaled, some things was different. I saw some different, you know, things on the horizon coming into the party, and I had to do what I had to do otherwise. But I still stuck around for like two more years. So.
Right on. Okay,
yeah.
Right on. Well, here's the beautiful part about it. Everything comes full circle, you know. And I guess I should have known, but I'm like, this man is always promoting and pushing what we're doing above normal. I did notice that, you know, like most people might share what we're doing every now and then. But I really, that makes sense because you really be having our back. And I didn't even know it, that you was already one of the brothers. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, the party made a man out of me, you know, at very, very rapidly. You see what I'm saying? It's a different thing when you're just responsible for yourself. You know, you don this uniform, this military wardrobe, and you are propagandizing. You see what I'm saying? It gives you education very, very quick. You know, so I was very thankful to come in when I did come in because, you know, to see stuff like 20 years later, you see what I'm saying? I'm like, whoa, this, I came from a different time. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, being adaptable. And salute to you for having that adaptable leadership time to exist from a time where things were real into a time where the real is not cherished and still be able to find a way to navigate through, you know, all of those treacherous waters that are there. You know, I definitely got to take my hat off and a salute to you. So that's, you know, we really always support the real.
Black Power, that's 100. Word, word. Yeah, so, but I want to talk about, brother, if you don't mind. There's still several cases that, you know, we have been working on since I've been in the party. And these cases have never gotten the justice. And I want to always, whenever I get an opportunity, talk about these cases. When I first became the chair, there was a case in Houston. Now, mind you, I'm originally from New Orleans. My parents divorced when I was younger, and so my mother moved back to Houston. So, like I said, between, you know, being younger, going back and forth to the northern part of Louisiana with my grandfather with his businesses, and then my parents got divorced, you know, we would have to go, you know, down to New Orleans and then be here. So I've always been the person that was traveling, you know, even as a kid. And, you know, everything was pretty much the same shit, different city, I should say. And so the issues that, you know, we were dealing with, no matter if it was in Houston, no matter if it was in, you know, the little town called Shreveport, or if we was in New Orleans, or so I got a lot of folks in L.A., you know, the issues are pretty much the same. You know, we deal with racism, and we deal with self-destruction. We deal with racism, and we deal with self-destruction. And the mix of that, as I said, we have a lot of powerful people that have always been around. We have strong organizations that have always been around. But what I do and must say is that, unfortunately, it takes some real, real fucked up stuff to happen before we come together organizational-wise. There's this air of competition that is going on between the different formations and different organizations that needs to have brothers and sisters that see beyond that and work together in solidarity. Because just like I was mentioning how, you know, although you may not have been actively, and I didn't know you was a new Black Panther Party member, you continue to do the work, and you show just genuine solidarity without trying to, you know, get no acclimate. You know, I noticed you do things naturally, and there are several other brothers and sisters that do things naturally. But this issue of our own self-destruction at our hands by how our brothers and now sisters are committing acts of self-genocide by selling drugs into our communities, by exploiting, you know, the sisters with this whole pimp and stripper culture, with this music industry that is more concerned about money than the message that they're putting out. This individualism is an issue as opposed to the highlighting and emboldening the culture of Black excellence, and highlighting and emboldening the spirit of not only Black excellence, but the warrior mentality of fighting back, of resistance, that has to be at the forefront of what we're doing. You know, we have never been a people that have just been just a kneeling on our knees, praying type people, and that's it, you know. And unfortunately, that's been what's been promulgated in media in this miseducation. There's always been resistance to oppression. There's always been resistance to white supremacy. There's always been resistance to our people being attacked. And that has to increase, you know. That has to increase. We have to, you know, build our ranks with even more and more people. But as I said earlier, the longevity of resistance, of people understanding that being a freedom fighter has to be a way of life. It doesn't mean that you can't be an entrepreneur and take care of your family. That's something basic that people should do, but that shouldn't be all that you do. It's something that everyone has a talent, you know, or a way that they can contribute to the movement, you know. Even if you're not going to openly be a Black Panther, you know, so you could do just like what you're doing. You promote the work that we're doing, you know what I'm saying? And that's, you know, a point I would like to get across, because there are so many cases of injustice. I mean, prior to social media, you know, we pretty much got information from word of mouth or what was told in the white man's media. But now that social media has hit, you know, information comes to us so frequently and constantly, and the pattern that we are seeing left and right is that not only are these crackers letting the pigs execute us left and right, there's a lot of children coming up missing. There's a lot of women coming up missing. These motherfuckers have really started this slavery stuff again. We know they're doing it with the prison system. Some folks might not know, but you should know. The prison system is taking over 3 million of our people in just 30 years. And, you know, now we're starting to see a lot of children being snatched in every city. We have to create and push a culture of warriors that are not only protecting our communities, that are raising our brothers and sisters, men, women, and children, to be not only protectors of our community, but also accountable to our community. You know, how can we have police killing us left and right? We have vigilante acts of lynchings going on, from Alfred Wright, who was lynched here in Texas. He wasn't hung in a tree, but he was, his neck was sliced, and he was mutilated. His body parts were taken, just like if he was hung in a tree. And it was a group called the Dixie Mafia and the Hemp Hill Sheriff Department that is responsible for it, and we know it, and the state knows it. There was a case in a few cases in Mississippi of open lynchings where brothers were hung. In 2015, Otisburg was hung in the backyard of the white folks where he had done 26 years in prison for them claiming that he had killed their daughter. He was hung in that backyard. The state did anything about it, was swept under the rug. Didn't do anything, was swept under the rug, nor the federal government, which we won't expect them to, because they never have and never will. But we were on the ground to expose it and are constantly exposing it. Fast forward, in 2017, a young man by the name of Philip Carroll was lynched in his backyard after getting into it with his white girlfriend and having a physical fight the same day. He was hung in his backyard. Pigs come in and say suicide, just like they said Otisburg committed suicide. So Otisburg was hung in a white folks' backyard. He was accused of killing their daughter. And then Philip Carroll was hung in his own backyard after getting into a fight with his white girlfriend. A few days later, a brother named Jeremy Jackson, this is all in Mississippi, head was cut off and his body was set on fire. And the Klan went on a spree through Jackson, vandalizing and writing nigger and destroying all kind of stuff on people's properties. And the police and the Black so-called ruling class who run those areas have not done nothing. And then just last year, in 2018, Willie Jones Jr. got into it with his white baby mama. And then them white folks hung him in their front yard at the end of the driveway. And nothing has been done about it. So we got vigilante acts of white terrorism. We got police acts of white terrorism that is being sanctioned by the state. The media will barely run any of these incidences. Every now and then something blows up and they got to cover it because uprisings happen. But for the most part, it's a whiteout on these cases. And being a part of the new Black Panther Party, you know, we've been pretty much front line with this, you know, checking those institutions directly, you know, at their front steps, from their police departments to their district attorney's office to their governor's mansions, you know, you name it, you know, the White House. We've been everywhere with most organizations. Just to keep it 100, they sit behind four walls talking about it. And we are at the front doors of our open enemy checking them. And because of that, we have been targeted. In fact, I have been blatantly targeted by the U.S. government. I have been put on, I guess, some type of a travel restriction to where when I try to leave out of the country, I tried to leave out of the country to go to London a few months ago. There was all kind of red flashing lights at the airport, which they alleged my passport wasn't working. It was taken at the embassy in Toronto, which was only a connecting flight to London. Said they was gonna, I would need to get a new one. I needed a special processing for it, and the State Department held my passport until the event that I was supposed to attend was taking place. Traveling domestically, I go through all kind of multiple harassment, discrimination, molestation at the airport at the hands of U.S. Customs and the hands of TSA. They go through my stuff. You know, they frisk me, you know, multiple times, search my stuff at least three times each way to travel. And, you know, I'm being targeted and my comrades are being targeted for doing the type of work that we're doing. We even had a comrade come down from Africa a couple of days ago to do some business non-related to anything with the party. But because he had a conversation with me on the phone about coming, he was held up at the airport and interrogated for 2 hours as to why, well, how did he know me and our organization. This government is turning up their aggression towards not only the new Black Panther Party, but also Black Freedom Fighters, period. And so, you know, these are the main things that I want to say. You know, we still must keep fighting for the gross injustices that are happening to our people, but we need also the people to step up and fight for us who are being targeted because of what we're doing. And lastly, I want to say that we have a lot of political prisoners from the 60s and 70s and the Panthers and the Black Liberation Army who are still in prison right now for doing just what we're doing on false and malicious charges. And I believe that will be the next move of the state, is to try to trump up some bullshit, you know, because we don't do anything unjust or illegal. You know, speaking up against tyranny and murders and assassinations does not make us domestic terrorists, but this is the label that has been put on myself and the new Black Panther Party for being freedom fighters. Not only have we been labeled domestic terrorists, they come up with some bullshit new title called Black Identity Extremists, and simply by these false labels being put on us, you know, we have become under direct attack. And so, but I will say this, that's not going to stop me nor New Black Panther Party, other freedom fighters, one bit. You know, it actually makes us even more emboldened because they keep throwing gasoline on the fire. You know, the fire of resistance will never be put out, you know. And so, you know, any, like I said in the beginning, any opportunity that I'm given to tell about what's happening to our people and to motivate other brothers and sisters to step up and to be an example of a freedom fighter. By no way am I perfect, you know, but at the same time, we need to have more and more people step up to the plate, you know what I'm saying? It needs to be like, you know, 20, 30 knowledge borns, you know what I'm saying? Like 20, 30 Sister Crystals everywhere, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's real, brother.
Mike Powell. I wanted to ask two questions because I want to, you know, stay in line with the time that we agreed. With the Black Cross and with this being the 14th year since Hurricane Katrina and 2 years since Hurricane Harvey, Could we talk about the Black Cross and some of the work that that wonderful outfit of your organization with the search and rescue, how impactful and beneficial it has been, and how could people support the Black Cross?
Oh, thank you for doing that. Yes, so the Black Cross was started right after Hurricane Katrina. In fact, during Hurricane Katrina, members of the New Black Panther Party, we basically, you know, Katrina was dropped in our lap. You know, it happened in my hometown. We had family members missing. A good bulk of the people were brought here to Houston, and we were able to hear firsthand, you know, the horrific things that the government was doing to our people after Katrina. They did for the first 5 days a segregated evacuation. You know, this is why you only saw black people in the Superdome. You know, the pigs were out shooting black people in the head and robbing people. Hundreds of thousands of people were displaced in New Orleans when they could have just went right across the bridge to Jefferson, to right on the other side of the bridge, like going from New York to New Jersey, that bridge. They could have been safe and went to Jefferson Parish, but the pigs drew guns on them and scattered, and the state scattered them around the United States. Hurricane Katrina showed us even more that this government don't give a fuck about us and that we had to do for self, so we started the Black Cross. A few years later, the earthquake hit Haiti. We reactivated, and we started gathering and sending supplies for Haiti, and not only medical supplies in the aftermath of the hurricane, the earthquake, but also the United Nations put feces in the water in Haiti, and there was a cholera outbreak. So we sent over 18-wheeler worth of water. So the work of saving ourselves and doing for our people is a natural part of being a freedom fighter, and it's something that was done out of necessity. And as we see these disasters keep going, and from Harvey, same thing. You know, they were focusing on the white areas. The black community had to fend for themselves, and then they got to us. And there's a lot of misappropriation of money that goes on. And so we not only do self-defense work and fight for justice, but we also on self-survival and disaster assistance, and we named it the Black Cross in honor of the Honorable Marcus Mosaic Garvey when he had the Black Cross nurses. And so we felt that it was in the same line when it comes to emergency assistance. And so people can help us by going to our website for NBPP. To join the New Black Panther Party or to support us, you go to nbpp.org. That's N as in New, B as in Black, P as in Panther, P as in Party. That's nbpp.org. You click that link. There's a link to contact us to join, and there's a donate button that you will click to support them, and it'll take you straight to the Black Cross website, which is nbppblackcross.com. But it's much easier to just tell folks one site that'll lead them to all of it, and that's www.nbpp.org. Not only we do supplies, we do search and rescue, we do emergency training, we do self-defense training, and, you know, we're constantly evolving as to the work that's necessary for us, for our people.
All right. And just, you know, for yourself personally and, you know, for some folks in the ranks, how were you able to stay resilient through these difficult times and also even times of betrayal?
I mean, we ain't got no choice. I mean, seriously, our ancestors, even just in the 60s and 70s, have went through way worse than we went through. You know what I'm saying? You know, we've had people who were, you know, our people are resilient, period. But if you're a freedom fighter, you just got to understand, you know, we are properly relieved when we're 6 feet deep. You know what I'm saying? So long as we are still under rulership of the people that enslaved our ancestors and stole this land from our ancestors, enslaved our ancestors, brought them from Africa. The European don't belong here in America. They don't belong nowhere but in the caves of Europe. You know what I'm saying? So we have an open and aggressive enemy. And so long as we are still in, basically, we are still in captivity and bondage. So until we get out of captivity and bondage, no one should be at ease. that we are at war. So unless you're a quitter or a coward, you know, you're supposed to keep working. And if we leave this earth, we're supposed to come back as mighty ancestors, like the ancestors who died and help us in the battles that we're doing now. It's our duty. We're still in captivity. I mean, we don't have no option. You know what I'm saying? We have no option. What we're doing, it will, even if it don't affect men, it'll definitely affect future generations. But I believe it's affecting the here, now, and the future. And we continue to work at the past. You know, because it's a continuum. It's protracted. People want something in the microwave. They want to hear a quick little sound bite. You know, people used to just push and share and like. You know, they think that, oh, they can do it. You know what I'm saying? People spend 40, 20 hours on a plantation a week. You know, we need people to step up and spend 42 hours a week towards black liberation. And that would make a whole lot of change. If everybody could contribute a couple hours a week towards black liberation, in particular, you know, join the new Black Panther Party. We got something that everybody can do. www.mbpp.org. I can't say that enough, you know. We got our hands on deck. We'll roll with those who we got, but betrayal, you know, people calling out, you know, people not having that long fight. I mean, that's just part of it. You know what I'm saying? We roll with those who still roll and keep going, you know what I'm saying? And keep bringing in and sharpen our swords and bringing in other brothers. You know, we really can't waste time too much pondering on betrayal. We got a lot of work to do, bud.
That's right. So I want to thank you again for taking time out of your schedule to come and share some of your stories with us. You got a chance for final thoughts right now. Your final thoughts and anything that you want to promote, anything that you want to bring attention to, you have the floor. Also, one more time, how people can join, support, and whatever means available to you and your audience.
Yes, sir. So, again, my final thoughts for everybody revolution. You're supposed to be constant in the first place. So, you know, as far as positive information, it's positive. And if you're being constant to all of it, it's basically getting a mission. You can take consciousness. Most people take
Sister Chris, you're kind of breaking up a little bit.
I was saying that those of us who are conscious, it's not good enough to just be conscious. In fact, you were supposed to be conscious in the first place. Just because we've been knocked upside our head with false knowledge, you can't just sit and be conscious. You need to take that conscious into action. And as you take that conscience into action and become an activist, you will see that this system is totally and completely corrupt. And activism is not going to be enough either. You must evolve into be a revolutionary, a freedom fighter. And that is the highest form of a black person, if you know what time it is. And in doing so, you know, we look for other revolutionaries. The way to reach us is www.nbpp.org. NBPP, N as in new, B as in black, P as in Panther, P as in party.org to join or support. And there's a donate button on there if you want to support the Black Cross. You know, so much can be said. We've had many great speakers. I could talk all day. 99% of what our people need is work and boots on the ground. People to put their bodies where their mouths at. Black power.
Black power. Black power. Thank you again, National Chairwoman General Crystal Muhammad, for coming in and giving us a call to action. So everybody who's listening and everybody who will listen. You have a formation that is dedicated to bringing about a reformation and justice for our people. So www.mbpp.org. If you don't have the heart to soldier, have the damn heart to support. You understand what I'm saying? Everybody can't soldier. And if you know you can't soldier, then you support, you know. So you give your time, give your energy, give your resources, give your prayers, give your ashes, and pass your swords and stuff to people who's going to use them. You understand what I'm saying? So I can't thank you enough again for taking time, coming on, and thinking out loud with us on this Thursday. Strength to you, strength to your organization. You'll always be here. Service. Before we go, y'all have a show every Monday. That's correct?
Yes, that's right, brother. We have a radio show every Monday. It's called the New Black Panther Party Radio. And to you can go to blogtalkradio.com/the New Black Panther Party. blogtalkradio.com/the New Black Panther Party. We're on every Monday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. Every Monday night, you can tune in. And if you forgot that address, anything that I've said tonight that you want to follow up on, from the radio show to joining, to making a donation, to getting involved with any of these cases that I've talked about, hit us up at www.nbpp.org, and we will respond. Thank you, Brother Knowledge.
And that Black documentary, Powell. That documentary, Black Power, when is that documentary going to be available for us to purchase, take a look at, have screening set up, you know, the documentary?
Yeah, so that was a film that we were featured in. It's actually a film, and it's called What Are You Going to Do When the World's on Fire? And this film, it's covering four different character types. I don't want to give it away too much, but you got some young brothers, you got a sister that's going through gentrification, you got the indigenous Indians of New Orleans that people call Mardi Gras Indians, which are truly the Blackfoot Indians. And they follow the New Black Panther Party. So this film features the New Black Panther Party, and it highlights some of the work that's been done in regards to the fight for justice for Alton Sterling and our fight for justice for the victims of the lynchings in Mississippi. This film officially hit the theaters a couple of weeks ago in New York. It's been showing in a few theaters around the country. And when it'll actually hit your city, it showed in New York a couple of weeks ago. We was up in your what part of the country are you in? It just depends on. It's been hitting different little sections. I've been checking out the reviews.
Yeah, I'm in the Carolinas.
Oh, you're in the Carolinas. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, if you want to know when the film is hitting your area, same thing. Hit us up at www.mbpp.org, and we'll let you know which theater is showing in your area. It's a small independent distributor that's putting it out, but despite the fact that it's a small distributor, it's been getting a lot of attention across the globe. In fact, it won like 12 different film festivals around the globe, and it just hit the theaters a couple of weeks ago. Now, what is going to happen as far as the distribution for Netflix and things of that, we're still trying to find out on our own. But as of now, if you want to see it in your city, send us a quick shout, and then we'll find out which theater is at and direct you guys to it. And in the meantime, I must say, we're working on putting together our own film, but we use that opportunity to be a part of this film for us to be able to push out some of these issues that we're dealing with that the U.S. media has very blatantly attempted to white out.
All right, there you have it. You got it all. You know, you got to hit that website to get involved. So thank you again, National Chairwoman, for your time and your candor and making it plain. Black Power and love to you always. You know, I ain't nothing but a phone call, a missed phone call, a smoke screen away.
All right. I'll send out some drum beats. All right, Black Power, brother. We appreciate you, and I love you, Black.
All right, love you, Black. Black Power. All right, fam, we're about to get up out of here. About to get up out of here. The last Thursday in Black August. Shout out to National Chairwoman Jenna Crystal Muhammad of the New Black Panther Party for self-defense, for coming in and showing us that revolutionary love. So with that, we say peace, love, and Black Power. Out of here.
Yeah.
In a while, nah, this shit ain't bull, this shit is foul. My ace room, we used to do this as a child. I can't believe where we at in the here and now. I know you probably mad, but I'm hoping you hear me out. Was on the same road, but you chose in a different route. Young niggas banging, exposing it for the clout. But we was better than that, you know it without a doubt. I had plans for you, you was bleak, I was Jay. All the homies would go crazy off the heat, we would play. I am my brother's keeper, keep a hand on the heater. But I ain't been the same since you got locked, bro, I need you. This is real shit through the speakers. Fuck the blood shit and fuck the gang shit. This is that big brother love shit. I hate to see you get washed by the system. I should've did more. While you behind the bars, you who I live for, nigga. I sent you. Damn, how many times I said I miss you? I dried up all the tears, I don't even need a tissue. Your son going through some things, I know it's all mental. He ain't been the same since you left and it's different now. And you probably wanted us to be close, but we distant now. And I'm missing how. You would always have the biggest smile. You was a Q fan, that was more in the Jigga style. Uncle D1, second to none. You was loved around the hood, you lose breath in the lungs of the young. I got the phone call, they said you had lupus. I'm looking up to God like, how could you do this? My mama said, don't even go and see you, cause you wasn't looking like yourself. You was losing your health and she felt like I couldn't handle it. This shit was damaging, I'm missing you. Forever, I'ma always keep a candle lit. I was slain, stood my ground like a queen. To my door, they shouldn't have came. Let freedom ring, they try to make our people sing the national anthem like we a part of this nation. Tell them we need revolution, reminiscing of Haitian. Don't have your energy wasted, got no time for debating. Get the Hebrews, the Moors, and get all the Kemetics. Get the Yorubas and Igbos, that's how you connect it. Put the differences aside, ask them all, could they ride for me? I die for y'all, would you die for me? And I accept your apology. Honestly, this came to me in the form of a dream. Cora Gaines was speaking to me, what does all of this mean? Told her we missing her, I promised we would honor the queen. Cora Gaines.
Rest in peace to Cora Gaines. Free my little brother, Theo Alexander. Free all the homies that's locked up, Big Struck. All the real ones, feel me? Rest in peace to my Uncle Derek. Rest in peace to my Uncle Tad Al. Missing you. Yeah.